Blog Talk Radio.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on nature for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media and just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P.
Jump on your bike, let's hit the road.
Come on.
Fuck the 5-0, man, we out of control. Hey. I'm a bad motherfucker, riding through the night. Hey. A 50 motherfucker and I love a fucking fight. Picture me rolling on my chopper on rims. No love for the other side, no need to be friends. Hit the gas, homie, you gotta keep on pushing. Got an out kid, check the dose, you need an ass. Put the ticket at the ticket, man, I ain't gon' pay. Another dude 30 days locked up in CJ. Twist the throttle, let's hit the rolling. My drag pipe on my bike, get the blowin'. A thug motherfucker street calling me. Like a mom calls the kids when it's time to eat. Approach me, homie, like the shit all good. I don't like half the motherfuckers that live in my hood. I'm a 10-year roller to the bone. Put 10 in the clip and 1 in the hole. Fuck what you heard, homie, I'ma always hit a bar. My homeboys my rubber, but we never ever fall. At the end of the day, we can always stand tall. The gov don't like me, oh fucking well. I guess you could call me the angel from hell. Hey.
Well, hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm right. This is the second part of two shows that we do. This is the Sam Crow Radio Show. And according to the three people that I talked to, they all have something going on tonight. And I talked to Dayton Callie, who plays the sheriff. And I'm waiting for him to get back to me, but he wanted to know the times, and we're working all this out, so it might be something I have to tape. I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
And then I have you, and I have, I think this is Amy right here. Is that you, Amy?
Yeah, that's me. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Say hello to Nora.
Hi, Amy.
Hello, Mark. Hi. How y'all doing?
Good. How you doing?
Staying warm. Sorry.
Yeah. What,
man, it's colder than a well digger's butt in Idaho right now. And that wasn't what I was just going to say. But, man, it's cold in Arkansas. Now, you know, if I wanted this kind of weather, I'd move to Minnesota.
Yeah, if I wanted this kind of weather, I'd have stayed in Chicago.
Yeah.
Hey, that's where I'm at. We're supposed to be negative 25.
Stay inside. That's all I can tell you, and just warm.
Wait, you have no idea. This is how funny it is I'm dressed, but I don't care. I've got long johns on, a pair of boxer shorts, a pair of sweats, a T-shirt, and a fleece hoodie on, and socks. I'm okay with that. I'm warm. Ugh.
Yeah, this is I was telling Nora, Amy, this is the second show that we do. It's called Sam Crow Radio Show. But the three actors that I talked to have something going on today. And the fourth actor that I talked to, who plays the sheriff, Dayton Callie, he's checking his schedule when we're working out the hours. So it might be a taped interview next week. I'm not sure yet.
Well, you know, Phil, man.
Go for it.
You know what? I love you a whole lot to be on this radio show, and you know this. Because I am not Sons of Anarchy's biggest fan. You know, my husband watches it. It is played in my household, you know, but I don't participate.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I don't know how to say this, but it's like everybody has a certain, you know, it's like all the guys that bought Harleys in the 90s. They want to they want to play the part.
Yeah, exactly.
And they want to watch the show, and they act that way, and they think that's the way things are on the outside. But I've been in some places where I've seen guys walk in with full-on Sons of Anarchy stuff, and they had to either take it off or got an ass-whooping, and then it got taken off.
Well, you know, it just...
You can't wear something you didn't earn.
No, you can't. You know, I have a whole deal. I have a problem with, you know... Now, I'm a hypocrite for saying this because I'd be all up in the biker's business, and you know that. But what you don't know is when it comes to the patch wearers, I run around with all the patch wearers, you know, all over the country, different ones. There comes a point in their business that I turn my head and I don't listen. I don't want to know. I don't ask you questions. Don't try to tell me. And, you know, they got this woman on TV making like she's running this bike club. And so now all, you know, because, you know, women's crazy. And you think it's bad when you got them men that's wearing them patches trying to act like they bikers. You ought to deal with the girls because all of them think they gymming now. And, you know, I want to punch them all in the throat because I want to say, you know, that MC stands for men's club. It don't stand for what this gymmer want to do. Right. And so I have drama in my real-time life because of this show.
Yeah. Well, I have a couple of friends who call some women and they call them Gemma. Just by the way they act sometimes, I guess. I don't know. It's like an inside joke, I guess.
Well, you know what my main problem is lately? That training. Where did they get up with the transvestite with the bikers? Now, I ain't never seen no transvestite with none of the bikers I run around with. But, you know, if they want to write that in their show, let them go ahead. But this is my problem with it.
You need to go up to West Hollywood. You need to go up to West Hollywood. You'll see all that stuff you want.
Well, yeah. But, see, here's my thing with it. I'm a big old gal. You know, I'm 6 foot tall and I wear 6-inch heels. I got 52-inch shoulders. So if the whole entire public gets to believing that a tranny runs around with the bikers, who you think they going to point out is the tranny when we all roll up?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, me. And I don't want everybody thinking I'm no tranny. You know,
yeah.
I got enough trouble.
Yeah, I mean, Bill and I one time went down to a bar in, what do they call that? Anyways, it's a part of town in San Diego, and we went there, and it was a woman's bar, but they were all, it was a lesbian.
They were
movie.
Not all women. But did you pick up any women in this women's bar that was not a women's bar?
No. It was a woman's bar, but we had to stop there because we were helping with one of their fundraisers.
Mm-hmm. You know, my stepdaughter is a lesbian and she's married to a woman and they're the happiest people on earth. I ain't got no problem with them. But I have a strict you can't lick it if you can't stick it policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I'm sorry, but I don't want, you know, they open up something because we all can sit here and look at this TV show and say, okay, this is to us what Days of Our Lives is to, you know, the real world. But the real world does not understand that's what it's like. You know, they watch that TV show and they think that's what we really like.
Right.
And so, blah, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. What do you think about all this? Are you a fan of the show?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of my friends are on that show.
Well, I understand, but Do you think it's good for our community or bad for our community? Let's put it like that.
No, to me it's a soap opera.
Me too.
Yeah, it's a nighttime soap opera, but it's not, you know, like, I don't watch daytime soap operas. You know, I just don't get into that. But this is a show that just kind of, it grabs you and kind of, you know, you go with the flow. I've watched all 6 seasons. And, you know, it's cool. I know it's not real. It's Hollywood style. But, you know, they do it, you know, I don't know, with a certain type of energy to it that is different than, oh, that Devil's Ride. It, I don't know, I wouldn't watch that show. But, you know, the way Kurt Sutter has done this and has had it set up for the last 6 seasons, it's good. He's done good with it. And like Phil says, you know, there are people in there that we've seen face-to-face or just know of, you know, and it's cool to see them in there, to have a chance to, you know, be a part of something like that. And we've talked to some really amazing people that have been on that crew, you know, and on the cast. And, you know, that's what I enjoy about it. They're real and they're not stuck up. You know, they're very down to earth. And, you know, that's what's amazing about it, you know. It's not like, you don't live in California, I don't live in California, so the chances of us meeting these people are slim to none, you know. But when they come on the show and talk about their personal life, talk about how they got in the Sons of Anarchy, what they think of it, or whatever the case may be, you feel the sense of that person. You know, and that's what I've always enjoyed since the Sons of Anarchy show here, radio show, has started. And like I said, amazing people have been on here already. It's been an honor to speak with them, you know, because some of them are very up there in their acting career. And so it's amazing that they take time out to come and talk on the show with us.
Yeah, well, you know, I ain't saying that against any of the actors themselves. So, you know, I'm not fond of the guy that plays Jax. He gets on my nerves. The rest of them, man, they just doing a job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, my problem is with the problems it's causing out here in the world. There's this little club that has started up down here in the South. I don't know. I think they're nationwide. And
what's
they just, you know, you basically, the Iron Order MC.
Okay.
And this Iron Order, they've been giving, they're a pain in the ass, actually, to just all the different clubs. You know, I've heard the Banditos fussing about them. I've heard some Boo Spiders fussing about them. I've heard some Outlaws. You know, they're a thorn in everybody's side with their bullshit club stuff, okay? And what I see happening is... and a lot of them is cops. And so, you know, they can't really do anything to them because they're all freaking cops. Well, then what I'm seeing is these Sons of Anarchy patch-wearing people are kind of hanging out with some of them Iron Order people. This is all a big old nasty fight just waiting to happen.
Right.
Yeah. They had the same problem in Arizona, and then suspended or fired.
A lot of people just don't get that.
Yeah.
You know, I saw somebody out, you know, by my house wearing Sons of Anarchy, so don't get me wrong, some of the stuff is cool, you know.
Hey, when I was back there, I seen them, and I had a guy walk.
It's crazy.
And I said, do you honestly knew you if you walked into the wrong place wearing that? Guy had no clue.
Yeah, they don't. You know, I had, you know, some stuff on, and, you know, people look at me like, oh, So, you wear that, and I looked at him, and I said, and you think that's safe? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you love the show? Yeah, I like the show, but it's a show. It's not an actual MC.
It is a show, but they're wearing a three-piece patch. And
I know.
So, you know, they're portraying themselves as, and they get patch drunk, and so they think they are an MC. You know, and I don't know if anybody's mentioned this or not, but them colors that they wear on that show, them kind of belong to somebody else, don't they?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. I know you're talking.
A lot of people laugh at them, you know. And like I said, I'm not saying that in a bad way at all. You know, people like what they like, and I get that. You know, but unfortunately, if they're saying they're wearing these shirts and they're thinking, or patches, whatever the case may be, and they're actually in their mind thinking this is an MC, they are, you know, unforgivably mistaken. It is not an MC. It is just a show.
Yeah, it's make believe.
The guys that I saw all had Chicago on the bottom for the bottom rocker.
I've seen them with Arkansas on the bottom rocker. They ain't right.
No, they don't have a clue. So I said
they don't.
They walk into the wrong place, they're fucked.
Mm-hmm. And Phil, you
got a message.
You
I just got a
out in the state. You know.
Well, I just got a message today that they're selling hoodies now with no bottom rocker.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know how hard it'd be to put a bottle rocker on them?
But you know how hard your ass whooping's going to be when you get it?
Because
they're already running around in them, and, you know, what exactly do you do to them? Because they're wearing something, like she said, from a TV show. So it's a screwed up. You know, I don't have nothing against it. If they want to make a biker soap opera and put it on the TV for them to watch, I don't give a shit. You know, I don't watch TV anyway, so I don't care. But
I don't
when
watch
the,
TV
when
much.
All of that,
I
mean, I don't watch TV. And when that crap starts coming into my world and causing trouble, but then I start bitching about it, you know,
right.
Because there's enough stuff. There are too many things in the biker world going on without having to add in a make-believe club into the mix to cause more trouble.
Oh, yeah. And half the people, they get laughed at. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, geez, are you serious? You know, and, I mean, I've had some people come to me and, oh, check this out, you know. We're the real deal. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I said, oh, wait here a minute, you know. And I come in the house and I'll put something on and I come out and I say, oh, this is the deal. Fake. Big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I've seen patches, you know, around here. Even, like, during the summer, guys are riding. It's like, and they act all hard-ass. And I'm looking, and I'm like, yeah, keep looking. Keep it up. You know what I mean? What do you do?
Here and laugh
somebody will. Somebody will entertain the idea of allowing them to know it is just Hollywood.
But they haven't so far.
Uh huh. I don't know.
So you know, I ain't got no problem with the actors. If you want to watch it, right? But you need to distinguish that it's about as real as Joan Rivers' face.
Exactly.
You know, it's,
or Santa Claus.
Yeah, you know, people go in there on that show and they put a man and woman in the same jail cell and let them make out. When does that happen in real life?
At some places. They do have that at some places, the conjugal visits. To what degree? I don't know.
I'm talking about this was like a holding cell. They had caught Jenna's boyfriend, and they caught her and stuck her in there with him. It don't happen like
that.
Yeah,
they
you know,
don't
and,
do that, no.
And the young and the restless is the same way, you know. They'll have right. where they can have the conversation in a jail cell thing going on. That's okay. What I'm worried about is one of these idiots that buys one of these vests off the Internet getting out there and robbing somebody, getting out there and shooting somebody or doing some other stupid thing because they get by with it on the show, and then it's going to bring the cops down on all of us because, hello, RICO law, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think this is Eva from Australia. She's going to tell you a story about three or four guys that went to have a beer. Is that you, Eva?
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Hi,
how
Eva.
Are you?
Hello, I'm good.
We have Nora and Amy on the phone. Eva's calling from Australia, Amy.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Amy?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I'm publishing a book in Australia, but I do not like the author of it since it was done.
It's there's only one state, thank goodness, who are looking at these laws, but it's, incredibly scary situation. I'll give you all an update of what's been happening. Apparently on the 1st of November, so over a month ago now, a couple of guys got together for a beer in a pub one afternoon, and you'd all think that was perfectly normal, reasonable thing to do. But with these new laws, if the police suspect that they're participants in a what they call organisation, which what anyone else would call a motorcycle club, they now can be subject to arrest if three or more of them are gathered together in a public place. So the police investigated for an entire month, reviewed CCTV footage, and investigated these guys for the crime of having a beer together in a pub. Now, they executed 5 search warrants, and they actually arrested 5 guys under this new legislation who are now in jail. They haven't been bailed, so they've been in jail now for a couple of days, and literally their crime was having a beer with a couple of mates. Now, 3 of the guys, according to those who know them, 3 of them aren't members of any motorcycle club. The one guy is a member of the Rebels, I think the father of a couple of them, and he wasn't arrested, even though he was there. But the guys who have been arrested, one of them, I believe, had actually installed something at the Rebel clubhouse. So all he'd done, you know, his only association was actually as a tradesperson there, and he's been arrested under these laws for being in a public place. So going to jail for 6 months now, if they're found guilty, for literally having a beer with their mates. Absolutely horrendous situation over here, and all of the families, I think 4 of the men at least have got young kids. There's 8 children, I think, under 9. One of the families has got a 9-month-old. The wives aren't sure now how they're going to be paying their rent or how they're going to support their families. Absolutely disgusting situation, and really, not much else I can say on it, apart from how ludicrous the whole thing is.
Yeah.
You couldn't have timed that any better than what I was just saying with you calling in behind me, because that's where it's headed in the United States if somebody don't get a handle on a whole lot of different things.
Yeah. It's so scary. It really is. And, you know, you'd think that in a Western country, you know, you have the right to choose who your mates are, who you know, what you're going to have for a job, what your lifestyle's going to be. But no, not in Queensland, not anymore. They can literally just decide that they don't like what association you're a member of, and that's it. You know, you can't go out even with family members. So I believe at least 2 of the guys were brothers, and one of them I think was a brother-in-law. But these guys, and certainly the father, you know, him, the father and the 2 sons, can't go out, can't have a beer together after work. Now, this pub, I believe, is a local pub that the Rebels have used to just, you know, have casual drinks at for over 20 years, and they've never caused any problems that I've heard about, and certainly if there were problems, it would have been all over the media. But, no issues from the locals. It's just a normal little town, normal people going having a few beers, and somehow or another the police have got hold of it and decided that that's it, you know, you can't go for a beer with your family or your mates, because they had this ridiculous assumption that if you're a member of one of these outlaw motorcycle clubs, or not even a member, just have any connection with a club at all, then,
relative,
you know, you're a criminal and therefore subject to these ridiculous sanctions.
And it's like I tell everybody, what happens there happens in Canada and it's coming here. But we got a Yahoo
yeah.
here in California helping them with that.
It's really quite scary, and hopefully we're hoping a high court challenge will be launched in the next week or so. They're lawyers who are frantically going through all their cases to try and get a good case up and running for the court. They've said they want to get it lodged before Christmas. Now, while that will be a huge relief to people who are anxiously waiting to see if the High Court will overturn these laws, it doesn't help the people who are currently in jail, you know, the ones whose lives are already being completely destroyed by this ridiculous assumption from the Attorney General in Queensland, Jared Blay. He says he's a Christian man, but, you know, the values that he's showing here, they're the most unchristian values I think anyone has ever seen. Just, you know, ripping apart families, assuming people are guilty, you know, no forgiveness, no compassion or empathy there at all. It's really quite a terrible situation.
I thought I saw an article today about the families. Who's going to take care of the families while they're incarcerated?
Absolutely. Well, who will? It's a really good question. I mean, you know, in Australia we do have some social security, but certainly it's not enough to be able to guarantee these people won't lose their houses. If they've got, you know, private rent, if they're used to supporting themselves, chances are they will lose their homes and, you know, will really struggle to feed their kids over Christmas. And, I mean, the time of year as well, normally it's a time for families and people, you know, getting together and celebrating the end of year and celebrating Christmas. And these families with young children, I mean, some of them will be their first Christmas together as a family, and the main breadwinner has, you know, been thrown in jail for no real crime. I mean, anyone with any ounce of common sense could see that it's just the most ridiculous situation. For the government to say these guys have committed a crime and, you know, they need the public help to stop this criminal activity, when all these guys were doing was having a beer in a pub with, you know, their brothers and friends. Absolutely ridiculous.
Like going after work.
Yeah. Just,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's hard for words to describe it, really.
Yeah, I mean, when I have a little entourage that follows me wherever I go. And, but not my friends. And whoever I talk to or wherever I go, if I stop and I see two or three people and we start talking on the corner, now they're staking us out. Checking to make sure
yep.
that everybody's legit.
Yep.
But it's been starting here for about a year and a half now, but I've already
yeah.
been told we got ways to come at you.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So they do have consorting laws over here, which you actually have to be proven in a court of law, I believe, to be subject, you know, to these controls. But the really disgusting thing about these laws is they've bypassed the courts completely. The government has arbitrarily declared that the organisations, the criminal organisations, and then the members and, you know, associates are treated even worse than people who have actually committed real crimes and had their, you know, their rights and basic freedoms, their basic civil liberties completely demolished, all on, you know, just a whim of this idiotic Attorney General and the Premier. Both of them, I don't think, would have any real life experience or understand anything. Certainly not about, you know, basic civil liberties and the reason that the law is in place and the reason that people are meant to go to court and, you know, people and organisations should have an actual case with evidence, you know, to declare that they're criminal organisations. To just say, well, everyone knows they're involved in criminal activity, let's just declare them such and, send anyone to jail that they want. It's just an absolutely disgusting situation.
Well, they do a bullshit charge here, and then they throw on the gang enhancements, and then you get all the gang injunctions, and then all your shit gets seized, and your bank accounts get frozen. And you can't get a lawyer, nothing, because you got to go with the state lawyer because you can't get to your money to pay a lawyer. It's all crazy.
You know, I had one of my old school banker buddies mouthed off at me the other day on Facebook about, because I said I was a non-associate. And he made fun of me because I was a girl, and I said that. Well, you know, I got girlfriends that have went to prison over angel stuff, over bandit stuff, and usually it was trumped up. If you don't think a woman can be a non-associate in a cop's eyes, go ask Virginia Hill, right?
Yeah.
You know, but Phil, I was going to tell you, baby, I just got some company that walked in. I'm fixing to cut her short, baby. I'll talk to you soon on the air, okay?
Okay.
Give me a holler if you need me.
I will.
Okay? All right. Love y'all. Have a good night. I'll talk to you before Christmas, Phil.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, the laws that were previously enacted were similar to that. They would... they could seize assets. They could... Well, they still can if they actually go ahead with the laws. But... I guess the previous laws we had, they did actually require some kind of declaration by the courts, and they required actual evidence and proof that the club was involved in some kind of criminal activity. And the funny thing is, no club in Australia has been declared by the courts because they can't find any proof or evidence. And this, I think, is one of the key things. The police, with all their intelligence, you know, supposed intelligence, all of the investigations, the millions of dollars they've thrown at investigating what they call organised crime, they still have not come up with the evidence and the proof that these clubs are involved with criminal activity. So, you know, I think it's the whole cognitive dissonance thing. They can't believe that they're wrong. They have to assume, therefore, that these guys are more sneaky or, you know, more organised than what they previously thought, and scrapped the evidence and proof, just gone, well, because we can't find anything, it means they must be really bad, therefore we'll just declare them so. So they've bypassed all of the previous laws, and there were some protections in those laws which would hopefully stop innocent people being caught up in them. And, you know, the real organised criminals, which the majority of them have nothing whatsoever to do with any motorcycle club at all, could actually be subject to these laws and would be adequately dealt with. But the problem is, under the new legislation, they've only declared the outlaw motorcycle clubs as criminal organisations. I think there's one other street gang, but no other known organised crime groups have actually been declared in there. So it's just an absolute farce. It's in contradiction to the information and the knowledge that have come out of the Australian Crime Commission and the information that's readily available. It certainly will not have any impact whatsoever on any organised crime or crime, you know, at all for that matter, because they're actually not responsible for the majority of it. So it really is a big joke. And now we have this situation where a couple of blokes are in jail literally for having a beer with their mates, and they're now calling that a crime and saying, look, we're cracking down on crime, look how good a job we're doing, and they've just arrested some guys for meeting up in a pub.
Aren't they also doing it where they're getting on the business owners too? I noticed that a lot of them are putting up signs that they don't want to lose their license, so you're not welcome.
Yes. One of the changes to the laws as well is that any person with wearing clothing or accessories that are identifiable as belonging to a motorcycle club, they're now not allowed in licensed premises. And that includes tattoos as well, and also the 1% sign. So the licensed premises... the owner and the person who served whoever's come in, can actually be charged, either fined or imprisoned if they serve that person. So the person who, you know, goes in, they can be told to leave. They're not immediately fined or charged, but they need to be told to leave. And if they don't leave, they can also be subject to a fine or imprisonment. Now, the scary thing is, the majority of ordinary people do not know what the emblems or what the, you know, logos or symbols are of any of these clubs, let alone what one of these people look like. You know, any motorcyclist essentially who has a patch on their jacket, they are freaking out and thinking that this is someone who will, you know, subject them to arrest. Now, I don't blame the hotels and, you know, pubs and bars. I don't blame those people at all, because they could lose their business, their livelihood and their own freedom literally for serving someone who they weren't aware of was, you know, someone who came under these ridiculous laws. So it is quite scary, because the way the government's doing it, they're almost trying to vilify and ostracise a, you know, a subculture by making it an offence for other people to deal with them or associate with them in a way as well. And, you know, causing that level of fear within the community. No one wants to go to jail for something which is, you know, such a trivial, stupid little thing, but if that's what they're faced with, unfortunately, you know, the only option for them, I think, to protect themselves is, and as you said, what they're doing, saying that people who are wearing certain motorcycle clothing or have certain kinds of tattoos, and some of them are saying any visible tattoos, are simply not welcome in those establishments. And it really is a, you know, a really sad state of affairs, and I don't blame those people. I don't think it's certainly not malicious on their part. It is literally because they're subject to such awful sanctions themselves if they get caught by the police. And, you know, most places have CCTV cameras now. You know, who wants to go to jail for doing something stupid? Even though the laws are wrong, the sanctions for innocent people getting caught up in them are just as bad as those that the government have declared are criminals.
Yeah, and I also heard that even, I guess everybody's pissed off at the Harley owners group, because they said they like the law. They're backing the law.
Oh, yes, yes. They made a public comment that they believe the government were justified in what they're doing, and that the riders should tell the police where they're going on a ride so they can maintain their you know, good law-abiding status, I suppose, and that they shouldn't be welcoming other riders on the ride because, you know, they don't want to bring any attention on themselves. They believe, and this is ridiculous, they believe that members of clubs are going to infiltrate their rides and, you know, do their drug deals and commit crimes whilst hiding amongst these Harley owner group riders. Now, that is just ludicrous, absolutely ridiculous. Anyone with any ounce of common sense knows that if someone was going to commit some kind of offence, and I'm not saying these guys would, but if someone was planning on doing a drug deal, they're not going to go along on a social ride on a Saturday and, you know, stand there outside a little cafe on a hill, you know, and do a deal. It is just ridiculous to even suggest such a thing. But for this, you know, the head office of Harley Owners Group in Australia, their head office coming out supporting the government's crackdown and, you know, telling the members to be wary and don't associate with anyone who's from a club is, you know, divide and conquer. That's what it comes down to. For them to come out and say that, I think it's absolutely disgusting. All motorcyclists across Australia and across the world, I believe, should be standing up to this government and saying the laws are wrong. They've fundamentally breached the, you know, basic principles of our justice system. They're treating people as criminals who haven't been, you know, found so before a court of law. They're, you know, making guilt by association and subjecting people to penalties that are, you know, absolutely draconian compared to other people who've actually committed crimes are being subject to. And, you know, to have actual motorcyclists go, oh, no, I'm happy with that. I'm happy for innocent people to go to jail for doing nothing other than having a beer with their mates. I'm happy to vilify an entire subculture as long as I'm protected and I don't, you know, have any interference from the police. It's absolutely disgusting.
It's like over here, we got a guy in the town I live in. He's taking helmets, and people are calling up. They call up Bill's shop looking for somebody to bring him a helmet so they can drive away, because he already told them if they drive away without, he's going to arrest them. Well, I tell them, go ahead, let them arrest you, because basically all he can do to you is give you a fix-it ticket, which is $2,500 or $25. You go down and show him a helmet, sign the ticket, you pay the money, you're done. The thing that they're scared of is they use the word getting or I'm going to arrest you. Okay, none of them have had the balls. None of them had the balls yet to say arrest me. Unfortunately, I can't get them. I can't get them to arrest me because they won't even pull me over anymore because they just don't want to. They don't want to deal with their wasting. I've already been charged. I'll be charged with instruction under Penal Code 148 in California. And all I have to do when they do that is say I want to go see a judge because there's a night court, but it's all the way down by the border, and it's about an 8 hour, about an 8 to 10 hour investment of the time that they don't want to do.
Yeah. Yep. So that's the problem. A lot of people, they're not willing to stand up for things.
I mean, we've had helmet rides. We've had all kinds of stuff where we get 400, 500, 600, 700 people show up. And then when it comes time to stand on the front line, you look around you and you're by yourself.
Yeah. Yep.
Because
that's
you let
exactly
somebody
right.
else. It's easier to let somebody else do it.
Yeah.
You know, when I first got involved in all this stuff, even before that, really, but I heard stories and stuff. But when it happened to me, even Bill told me, why don't you just pay the ticket? Because my principals don't allow me to do that. He talked to me for an hour, just pay the ticket. Not worth your time and shit. And it was a point to prove, and I won that case.
Yeah. So one of the issues we have is that a lot of riders are now not riding in Queensland because they're so worried about being pulled over and they're so pissed off with the police constantly harassing them. Now, what we think should be happening is everybody should be out riding. They should be making the police stop them all every time, just put up with the 5-10 times on a trip. You know, they need to be overloading the system so it really becomes the farce that is. And when, you know, ordinary members of the public ring up, you know, their house is being burgled, where are the police? Oh, they've just stopped 30 motorcyclists up the road. What for? Oh, no, they were just on motorcycles. No reason. They haven't committed any crimes, but just in case we thought we'd better stop them. You know, the general public would start seeing through this if the police were tied up every day with, you know, hundreds of motorcyclists riding around and making the police stop them just for the sake of who they are, you know, because everyone would see it for the absolute joke that it is. While people stop riding and are fearful for, you know, going out with their friends because of the police, then the police are winning. They're saying, oh, look, we've got criminals off the roads. We've, you know, people aren't doing, you know, bad things anymore because our laws are working. They need to be showing up every day and going out there and not saying to the police, we agree with you, it's okay, I'm happy to be inconvenienced. They need to be making it clear, this is completely out of order. You know, you're...
But this
is not...
What about recording the stop? Can they do that?
We have asked people to.
Can they pull out a recorder?
We have asked people to.
Can they do it without getting in trouble?
They probably will get into trouble, but we have said to people, if they can record it, they should record it. But most people haven't had recorders on them when they've been stopped, and people are fearful that the cops will, you know, confiscate their equipment. And it doesn't seem to matter what you say to people.
Can they do that if
what rights they have?
Can they do it if you tell them they can't do it if you tell them you're turning it on? It's against the law?
They've changed the law here.
Okay.
Not in terms of recording. The problem is the new thing is the police can search and detain you if they believe, if they have reasonable suspicion that you're a member of or a participant in one of these clubs. So all they have to say to a motorcyclist, if they pull them over and the guy pulls out a recorder and says, I'm recording this conversation, they will say, well, I reasonably suspect you're a member of one of these clubs, so I am going to detain you and search you and confiscate your stuff because this is, you know, I believe that you're a criminal. And people are worried, the people who are going to be pulled over, you know, how do you argue with a cop that they have reasonable suspicion? You can say, well, what's your suspicion based on? The police suspicion is most likely because they're riding a motorcycle. And, you know, I really feel for the guys who have beards and tattoos and have an open-faced helmet because that, as far
as
profiles are concerned, you know.
Well, we have in Washington State, in California, in a couple other states across the United States, they've passed motorcycle profiling laws where you can't just pull a guy over for being on a motorcycle. Has anybody checked that out?
for over there to try and use that as a open that door to get it on the ballot over there.
Yeah, I think that's quite interesting. I can't see that it would ever come in here in Australia simply because we have such a small number of motorcyclists. I mean, we only have around 800,000 motorcyclists across the entirety of Australia. And, you know, mm-hmm. in Queensland, for example, 4.7 million people and only 160,000 of those are motorcyclists. So the general public wouldn't see, you know, they wouldn't be supportive of it because they would think it was a non-issue. And this kind of thing would be, you know, a state, for state government.
What about, are they pulling people in their cars because they got a support sticker on their bumper?
If you have tattoos in a car and your arms hanging out the window, they've pulled blokes over for that. Because they think they're a bikie in a car, which they've got their tattoos.
They think they're undercover now.
Yeah. They've pulled over guys who have got fast, flashy cars. Oh, you know those, boy racer type cars, the really expensive ones that have all the expensive
Well, I'm just thinking that I'd probably get arrested in the first 10 minutes I get off the plane over there.
Yeah, quite possibly. Although, you would have to have committed something to be arrested. So if you turned up with three mates, you'd probably be arrested. Or two mates, sorry. So three of you turned up together, they'd question
probably
you.
Be arrested for what I wear. They'd probably arrest me for what I wear.
Only if you're in a licensed premises and you refuse to leave.
What about the airport?
I think if there was licensed, yeah.
Probably have a hard time getting through customs first.
Yeah, you could try it. It is ridiculous, you know, and for people to know where the laws apply and how they apply, it's really, it's quite hard, I think, for ordinary people who you'd assume you can just go about your normal business and not have to worry about it. But, you know, the situation, you're walking down the street, you walk into the supermarket to buy some milk, and another one of your mates happens to be there who also, you know, is a member or associated with a club. So the two of you mm-hmm. are there, that's fine, there's two of you together. And then one of your brothers walks over, straight over, without even thinking, oh, g'day, mate, how are you going? Chat. Three of you together, bam. Now,
wow.
Set them there. They don't have to catch them on the spot. They can just get the CCTV footage.
They can subpoena the footage? Nora? Hello? Nora, you still there? Hello? I'm sorry?
What's going on?
Can you talk about
Hardy?
How you doing?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
Good. We were just talking to Australia, and they got cut off.
Yeah, I heard, so I thought I'd call in. Give a little something else other than some dead air, but I hear you got some music playing, so it's a good piece.
Yeah, no, that pops in, and
okay.
I said sometimes I have to,
it just does that automatically, or whoever's listening, the powers that be just decide to play a song and screw up the conversation.
Sorry to hear that. So that happens frequently, huh?
Oh, yeah, it's been happening for a while now. It just depends on what we're talking about. Like, Australia's got all those crazy laws now, and if there's three of you, they just arrested three guys for having a beer. They've been watching them for a month. They waited till they all went back to the bar, and they arrested all three of them on a consorting law.
Well, that's not cool.
No, whatever it happens here too, Terry. But whatever happens in Australia, they're kind of like the test case, and then it goes to Canada, and then it comes here. When all this has been going on, the thing that started for us was when we helped with that law in Washington about the motorcycle profiling bill, where they can't just stop you for riding a motorcycle, but in Australia, they stop you for riding a motorcycle. And then in here in California, they were doing it, but now they're doing it as a safety check. So we got a guy here that's been taking helmets from people, and I've been telling him just right away, you sign your ticket and you can drive away. It's only a $25 ticket. You're going to go right to wherever you need to go. You know, if it was a safety issue with the helmet you had on and he takes your helmet, then he's causing a safety issue because he took your helmet, whether he feels it's safe or not for you. To me, it's a choice. It's always been a choice.
Well, there's obviously an erosion of rights, not only here in America, but around the country. Around the world. But isn't there a collaboration that's going on with the United States officials from some governmental law enforcement agency as it relates to bikers in Australia? I think I read something about that.
Yeah, they just decided they need to do that. You know, it's basically population control is what it is, because I don't know if you heard what Eva said, but there's 800,000 motorcyclists all throughout Australia. And in Queensland, there's 160,000 registered ones. And 4.2 million people, so they're trying to...
Oh, that's a heavy... That's a heavy population. That's a heavy population in a country that size of bikers.
Yeah.
As opposed to the United States, where there's 8.3 million motorcyclists.
Well, there's 1.2 million here in California.
Wow.
If I could get 100,000 to ride without a helmet for one day, I'd shut down the court system for 6 months, maybe 9 months.
So what's the news in California?
Just that we got a thing January 11th up in Sacramento at the Capitol to present some stuff. We got some representatives that are behind us. I'm getting asked to get some actors and other people to step up to the plate. Other than that, just rolling along day by day. Bill's got some issues with medical issues, and his wife's got some medical issues, so he had to step away for a little bit, but he'll be back soon.
Okay, I was hoping to jab him a little bit with the comment that I made on Facebook, your event page, but I guess we didn't get that. I'm not going to be able to get that reaction today.
No, I'll see him tomorrow morning, probably about 10:30. And if you want, is your phone number the same? I think I still have it.
Sure is.
I lost my phone, and I had to get a new one. So when I dropped it on the freeway while I was riding, and when I got to my house, I called, and I could hear the cars going by because I guess my phone switched on, sliding across the freeway. And I couldn't pinpoint where it was, so I had to get a new one.
No, good thing there's no such thing as a long-distance call anymore on a cell phone.
Oh, I know, huh?
You're right.
Yeah. But
on this end.
How's things with you?
Things are good. Things are good. On this end, we're making that transition from World of Soul. Motorcycle community to World of Soul Motorcyclists Association, so that we can add some value to the motorcyclist riding experience. You know, roadside assistance, accidental death and dismemberment supplement, K-9 cash savings at the register in partnership with manufacturer dealer points and a whole lot more. It'd be great if we can even have an event here in the Chicago area, somewhere situated along Route 66, to get California out this way for a chance and invite some folks in from the East Coast as well. It's a transportation hub, and we haven't had anything like that here in the Chicago area for as long as I've been around.
I was just there in October. I just had enough time to go to do my niece's wedding and take care of some family stuff, and then I had to come back. But I should be back. I should be, yeah. I was there for like 7 days. Take care of some stuff, my brother, my sister, and do my niece's wedding. But came back, and I guess I brought the cold with me. Everybody was giving me shit for a couple days.
Never enough time when you're back home. I'm sure that 7 days just flew by.
The only thing I got to do was eat the food that I like.
Tell us about it. What are your favorite foods back home?
What
can you get here that you can't get in California?
Chicago pizza.
Moretti's pizza up on Devon. Chicken Inn off of Tui. Jay's Beef on Montrose and Narragansett. Russell's for ribs on North Avenue and First. It's just not the same out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could imagine. There's so much unique food here, from the ribs, the polar sausages, the pizza. Boy, the hot dogs, you name it.
Yeah, I was trying to get down to Grand and Pulaski there for Jimmy's, but I didn't get a chance to. And then my other place that I wanted to go was down on Maxwell Street off of Halstead there, where they sell the pork chop sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
But what's up? So I noticed that you're doing the other thing, and I posted that for you today. But if you send me a workable link that people won't have trouble with, and I'll put it in the friends column. Send me something to post to the blog, because we're like 90,000 hits a day now.
Wow, that's quite a bit.
Yeah, if I could get everybody to send me a penny or a nickel, I'd be sitting on a beach somewhere doing this remotely right now.
Yeah, that's the first thing that came to my mind, is how can you monetize that?
Mm-hmm. But then I couldn't do it the way I wanted to do it. It's just like this show, no sponsors. If I had sponsors, I'd have to. Couldn't do it the way I wanted to do it.
Yeah, you'd have to take your pants off, man, and bend over backwards, dude. Been there, done that.
Yeah, and like tonight was... on Wednesdays, we after the Sons of Anarchy, we do the Sam Crow radio show. That's what this is tonight. But I had talked to four actors already, and three were busy, and one, the time was conflicting with something he had to do today. One guy's filming for another show that's going to be called, Emilio's filming a show called Gang Related. It'll be out in May. David is up in, he had to go up to Oakland. And Rusty, I think he's got some stuff going on with his band. So everybody, and Dayton Kelly is the other guy that I talked to today. So he plays the sheriff. So it's going to work out where probably in the next 3-4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, that'll be the lineup. I try and get the lineup set every couple of weeks.
Looks like we'll have an opportunity to connect with a couple of stars of Sons of Anarchy here next month. The 17th through the 12th at the Chicago Bike Show, so I'm looking forward to that. Working with promoter on that one, out of
who's
going to
be there? Who's going to be there?
It was Kim Coates, and Theo Rossi. Yeah, that's right, Juice.
Uh huh. You get to talk to him, so I said hello.
Looks like I might have the opportunity to do just that.
Okay.
Yeah, that show is going to be wrapping up here, I understand, pretty soon.
Last night.
Is that right? Last night was the last show.
That's correct.
And for people that watch it,
to show you
can't
how
give away.
Well, life goes on after the show, so it'd be interesting to see what direction the actors go in as it relates to their careers and their.
Well, there's
their
one more year.
With the motorcycle community.
There's one more year, but last night was the season finale. There's going to be a season 7.
Oh, I see. So next year is the last season, period.
Correct. Then he might come out with a show called The Original 9. Still up in the air yet.
Now, what's The Original 9?
The Original 9 guys that started the club.
Very good. Tell me something, Phil. Tell me about the World of Soul motorcycle community and your thoughts about, if you don't mind, World of Soul morphing over into a National Motorcyclist Association. Can you see value and
it all depends on what depends on what your core values start out as.
What the card value starts out as?
No, what your core values are, what you're coming together for.
Got you. Yeah, that has definitely to do with being recognized by.
You got to learn. Yeah, you're gonna have to earn you're gonna have to earn your respect.
Yeah, I think the thing is that gets us immediate attention is getting all of our numbers into one body. Because the community is so segmented, scattered, there isn't an opportunity to leverage the numbers. And when we are able to bring everybody together under one umbrella, it makes it possible for us to be recognized for cash savings at the register, negotiations to receive.
Yeah, there is strength in numbers. There is strength in numbers. You just have to get everybody on the same page.
What's the commonality?
Motorcycles.
Everybody wants to save money.
Everybody wants to ride their motorcycles, and they want to be able to. Some of them ride them straight through. Some like to stop at a nice hotel with a shower, a nice place to eat, where they won't get hassled walking in wearing dressed as a motorcyclist or a biker. You gotta think all those spots all along the way. You gotta get everybody in that whole program. Say I'm gonna go from here. I'm gonna go from San Diego, and I'm gonna drive to Chicago, and I'm gonna take 80 East, and then I'm gonna go ahead. Once I get to the other side of Texas, I'm gonna drive straight north through all the states. So you gotta remember, okay, there's a helmet law here. They don't like motorcycles here. They got speed traps here. Da da da. You gotta figure all that out. Everybody's gotta come together and be involved in that. And then you're gonna need a couple of attorneys on retainer just to help out for things that happen along the way. Because if you take a group, and if you're the one sponsoring that group to go, then the sponsor of that group is basically the watchdog of everything that happens on the way through. So everybody has a safe trip, an enjoyable trip.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Well, at present, we do offer, in partnership with Motel 6, the discounts at all of their locations, nearly 1,200 of them around the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good piece. And we're looking forward to strengthening our ties with a major insurance carrier as it relates to accidental death and dismemberment supplements. You know, it's been an issue. From time to time, persons passing away on the motorcycles, unfortunately, and there's a passing of the hat because there isn't any monies for expenses. So at present, we've got provisions for a $1,500 payment for accidental death and
mm-hmm.
$300 for dismemberment. And that's just standard with the card, and we're looking to increase that with another carrier, and we're talking about that now. So we're looking forward to making that happen. And it's coming standard. It's embedded in the card for an entry price that is $49.95
mm-hmm.
and $89.95 at the highest level. including the adult side of it. So we're offering cash savings at the register, the savings on the motorcycle parts, the hotel access with discounts, roadside assistance, and an accidental death and dismemberment supplement.
Are the Harley dealers on board for the discounts?
There are some Harley Davidson dealers on board. That's a slow process, but we're having them come on board daily, one or two here and there. So we've got to ramp up those efforts to get them on board. Here in the Midwest, we've got dealer groups on board. So there's one dealer group that may have five dealers, and there's another dealer group that might have 12.
Uh-huh.
And then we were doing the series as well.
Yeah, you gotta make it an enjoyable ride. You gotta make it a trouble free ride, and you gotta make it the start point and the destination. Everything has to be flawless. You're gonna have your problems here and there. Bill and I, 4 months ago, were riding, and a guy had a heart attack, and he was in the middle of the pack, and he just took off to the side, and he just drove off the road. He didn't want to involve anybody, and by the time he hit the guardrail, he was gone.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. In fact, he was a year younger than me. He was a year younger than me.
Well, I envy the guy for those that don't go out that way, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, but
he went out the way he wanted. He loved riding his bike, so he went out the way he wanted to go, basically.
Yeah, it's been good for him. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunate, but good.
Yeah.
The thing is, he should have had a World of Soul card.
Well, we had, there's a bikers, down bikers across the United States. They stepped up to the plate. We had a couple of religious groups that stepped up to the plate. And Bill and I passed the hat for the guy and made some contributions of our own and had a couple of fundraisers for other people, and it all works out. It just depends on when I can, how soon we can get everything together, because, you know, trying to throw something like that together real quick, you don't get a lot of people. So we try, and if something happens and then they have the funeral, everything, and we have a memorial later on down the road, then it turns into a bigger thing. It's just we have a celebration of life for the guy.
Well, as an organization, we want to be able to have a part in the final expenses of those that ride motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
Out of respect and tribute for them.
Right. No,
and those
and
that preceded them, because what we're doing is we're trying to make a situation where our environment is improved. And so this is actually a legacy piece as well.
Okay.
When you think about the three words itself, world of soul, it's about
right.
The environment and spirit thereof. And the spirit of the motorcycle community really reflects those that not only love the passion, but really genuinely love each other out of the camaraderie of the sport and just the mere enjoyment of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from riding motorcycles. So everybody wants to take care of their brother. We are our brother's keeper.
Right. That's exactly how it is. I mean, it's like this. When we're going to go on a run, and if we meet at Bill's shop or we meet at a destination, we always take a walk. Bill, I, and a mechanic. And we advise people, it might not be safe to ride this because of this, it might not be safe to ride this because of that, because of the distance. And a lot of people, they just go and they'll change the oil before they go on a trip, and that's it. They don't get the bike checked out or nothing. They don't check the tires, they don't check the fluids, the tranny, how the bike's been running up until that trip or whatever. A lot of people just buy the bike and they don't do the service right away because they're afraid to take it to a dealer because they think they're going to get bent over. But if you're going to, it's like this. When I service my bike or I service the other bike, I make sure that the guy I take it to, he checks the whole bike over and he lets me know what I need to do down the road. He saved me about $3,000 on a little plastic part that would have just destroyed the motor. And I ended up doing a gear drive and cams and heads and all kinds of other stuff because I was doing one thing and I did it the rest there.
Ooh, good, good. Speaking of getting bent over by a dealer, you know the situation that happened with my motorcycle at the dealership prior to our national launch of Ride for Change, Ride for Hope.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Did they straighten it out for you?
No, they didn't. You know, it's been 2 years, and the bike's still sitting over at a dealership, not necessarily one in which was, I'd like to say responsible for the motor and the condition of it not being functionable within five miles from that dealership. But ironically, we have a full-page ad in the Dealer News magazine, and
mm-hmm.
just adjacent to it, that dealership is no more. The dealership
mm-hmm.
was sold
right.
because the owners were in foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
So it really helped me to appreciate the things that they may have been going through that prompted the situation that I experienced because they were pressuring me for sales opportunities as it relates to work on my motorcycle aside from the things I had asked them to do. It's really interesting, you know, and that karma is something else, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's you know, I walked into a dealer. Bill and I have a friend of ours that works at the dealer, and he's been bugging me for, they want to buy my Dyna for the last couple of years, and it's not going anywhere, and I tell them that all the time, and they're like, well, yeah, but we got a guy who wants to buy it. Well, that's tough shit. It's not for sale.
It's a good market for motorcycles these days. I see that Harley-Davidson is introducing two new.
Yeah, they already got recalled.
Model?
They already got recalled.
Yeah, they do. They do for the heavier models. That's right. That's right. That's a sad situation.
Makes me want to run right out and buy a new one.
Makes me want to hold on to the one I got. That's for sure. Yeah, but
okay.
That Indian market is really...
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Nora.
I thought you were done. I was going to say,
okay.
Now, what does your club involve? I mean, like, what do you do? Do you do, like, special events or anything, or...?
We have, first of all, ours is not a club. It's an association of motorcyclists that... consist of both independents and individuals that are members of clubs. Wanted to get that out right away. And we do have a signature awareness campaign called Ride for Change, Ride for Hope that we situate in local communities around the country. And the event pretty much for the most part tells a story about America's history that says along America's roadways are many places of historical significance. And once we retell those stories, we visit those places, we find them just as inspiring today as they were upon inception. They say, despite our challenges in this country, we've always found ways to move the nation forward. So, therefore, Ride for Change, Ride for Hope.
So, now, do you have, like, a large association, or is it only so many people in your association?
Well, you know, right now we'd like to say we've got about 9,400 motorcyclists who are pre-registered for the opportunity through our social network. So we're in the process of converting them into paid membership and card holders.
So
okay. So what, the only way that someone could be associated with you is if they have a specific type of card?
Well,
membership?
Yes. Yes, that's correct. The membership card is an indication that you are a member of the association.
Okay.
And it entitles you to benefits. That's the purpose of having the card, so that you can present the card in the event that you're stuck on the side of the road, you flip the card over, you call the 800 number, tow truck comes and picks you up. You're at a Harley-Davidson dealership or a Metric brand that honors the card, one of the participating dealerships, you show the card and you receive a discount.
Okay.
And I think it's a great thing because the first time I used the card was with Oaklawn Harley-Davidson. They're no longer in business, but they honored the card with a 20% discount. And I remember when I first used it, I bought a navigation system that retails for $800. I got $160 off of a card that retails for $49.95.
Mm-hmm.
Car paid for itself first time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the benefit
in
the association.
Okay.
You just got to be careful with the word association, brother.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. And that's why I wanted to bring up this conversation, because isn't it something how that could cause an issue right away because of misconceptions. But if you would, please tell me what you had in mind.
Not association, but thinking of another word.
Coalition.
Well, yeah, coalition would be all right, but there's a lot of association with different things with coalition. It's got to be something that's catchy. I'm thinking. I put on my thinking cap right now.
Why is that, though? Why is it when you bring up the words coalition and association, people fret all of a sudden? Oh, I can't get involved in that. Or that's negative because.
Because it's written into laws.
What do you mean?
Well, we had the motorcycle profiling bill that was passed in California has association written in the bill. It's just like there's a lot of places downtown right now are putting in signs that saying if you're wearing a vest or colors, you're not allowed in. And they're doing that because the police told them they'll pull their license. But what they don't realize is the police aren't the ones that are going to be called to court when they're discriminating against you under the UNRRA Act 1974. In California, we have a law already. It's been on the books since 1974. Let me see if I find it here real quick. Yeah, right here. The Supreme Court ruled in the case of Cohan versus California, 403 U.S. 15, 1971, that individuals have the constitutional right under the First Amendment to wear clothing which displays writing or designs. In addition, the right of an individual to freedom of the association has long been recognized and protected by the United States Supreme Court. Thus, a person's right to wear the clothing of his choice as well as his right to belong to any organization of his choice is constitutionally protected, and persons establishments who discriminate on the basis of clothing or club membership are subject to a lawsuit. Don't subject yourself to civil and criminal penalties and to expensive and time-consuming lawsuits. Don't discriminate against people wearing colors or motorcycle attire. But they're caving into the cops out here anyway. I mean, we went to a thing 2 years ago. We were at one event and walked over, or rode over to the other event, and had 12 sheriffs sit there while we ate. When we were done eating, they had us leave because nobody would take anything off.
It all just depends on who's going to stand up and who's going to bend over. Is that you? I thought I lost you.
No, I'm here. That's interesting that you mentioned that once again. I've yet to experience that type of discrimination here in the Midwest. I don't know what that would feel like, being in California and having to go through that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about if he's... I've experienced some things when I was back there. Just people, the way I dress and the places that I went with my brother and his family. I got looked at, but nobody said I had to take anything off. And I even had two tactical guys from Chicago PD sit 10 feet from me while I ate my dinner with my family.
Huh.
And then they followed me in and then sat there and they ate while we ate, and then they left when I left, and they followed us all the way back to my brother's house just to see where I was going.
Okay.
The guy living next door to my brother's on the drug task force in Chicago, and he was peeking out the window when my brother picked me up from the airport and we went to the house. So my brother and I walked over and he told him, "Hey, I told you my brother was coming. This is him. I won't say his name, but we introduced each other," and he asked me, and it turned out he had a bike in the garage, and we started talking, and I've been hooking him up with parts from California for the last month and a half.
Yeah, so those are some of the negative things. About the positive side of motorcycling, man, and the diversity thing as well, you know. Are we crossing the tracks over there in California? Everybody getting together, having a good time?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I'll see Howie and his boys this weekend. The first Sunday in January, they have their... They have their biker breakfast at the Sweetwater Harley-Davidson, it's right on the border, southeast corner of California. Southeast corner of the United States, they have a biker breakfast. And they have one, and then another group has one the next week, and it's all month long. And the same thing with the Abate ride out of San Diego at Case Sessions Park. They have all the groups come together, as well as when we do the Confederation of Club meetings, the same thing. Everybody comes together.
I want to come to California, San Diego area, Oceanside, and see if we can execute Ride for Change, Ride for Hope down there. Tell a story about, MCRD or something, you know what I mean? A lot of folks have come to that place.
Yeah, there's, in fact, I was talking to a kid from Philly the other day, and I was working on the Macon Island. No, it was the Essex. They're right next to each other. And he wants to get a bike. So he's seen me, and he came up and he asked me a few questions, and I told him what to do first and how to get his license, how to ride the bike. But the first thing I asked him was, anytime now, being in the military, if you're a sergeant and below, you have to get permission through your chain of command to get a bike. You have to have perfect evaluations. You have to be a good guy. You can't be no alcohol-related incidents, no troubles, no nothing. They won't let you get. They won't give you permission to get a. And if you buy one without their permission, you'll get charged for disobeying a lawful order. It's written into the orders.
Didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of things going on with the military because a lot of guys are getting hurt and then getting paid for the rest of their lives for being stupid.
Is there anything that we can do to bring folks together there in California, if not just for one occasion? We've talked about that Riders United to Serve Humanity campaign. It takes one person for each of these 12 different...
The 22nd of this, Bill has his annual, the big cover-up in front of the shop, and we usually get about 1,500 to 2,000 people, and we get pretty much every biker club in California comes to that. That would be a day. Yeah. And it's put on by the Pioneers and the Messengers, which are two recovery groups, MCs. And I don't know if you'd be able to speak there or not without talking to them, because I know they have a planned agenda.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. How can I get down there and have an audience? And, man, do you even think I would be effective in that audience? Because the California market is a different market.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's just, from Chicago.
It would just like be – do you have the confederation – you got a confederation of clubs there in Chicago. Have you attended any of their meetings?
There is. No, I haven't. The last time I did that was about maybe 2 years ago.
Well, you might want to try. You might want to try and see what happens, because they're all connected. And if they vouch for you there, then you should have. If they vouch for you there, then you'd have no problem out here. See, the problem is, nobody's gonna give you the time if you don't have a recommendation. Basically, somebody's got to vouch for you.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? I should think that, man, coming from the MC world, but it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of ignored the things that I know, because I haven't been in that environment for some time.
Yeah, if you want to go back to that environment and get involved, you're going to have somebody vouch for you. If you've been out of it for a while, you're going to have somebody bring you in, so you're going to have to start going to events, whatever event it is, make the time to go and be seen.
That is the absolute truth.
Hey, I'm not just a good-looking guy. I'm smart, too.
That, you know, I was rocking in my chair, and I had to stop. That is the absolute truth. I'm all over the place, man. I'm dealing with motorcycle ministries and, man, sport bike clubs. But it's a different world with the MC world.
Yes, it is.
A lot of politics, man.
A lot of politics, but you'll open a lot more doors if you get vouched and backed.
Yeah, I have to get some thought to that, man. See what I can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge market.
Every motorcycle club in the world knows who Bill and I are. They have our pictures
on the dartboard.
On the dartboard, my wife said.
So, Noah, you're back on the phone, is that right?
Yeah, but some guys like us and some guys don't. Some guys like us and some guys don't, and you're going to have that. And like I said, you're going to have to earn your respect first. That's why you need to go and be seen.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You got to say you're a stand-up guy.
That's going to be a hard one to do, man. I'm a butthole.
I'm an insensitive prick, so don't worry about it.
Will I be?
But I'm not. It's like I'm all over. Bill goes south, I go north. But since Bill's been under the weather, I've been going everywhere. I have some haters. I have some guys that, as soon as I pull in, they right to the front here. What do you need? What have you eaten? You want something to eat or whatever? And that goes for whoever's with me.
Yeah, that's a good thing when you get that carte blanche treatment, man. You put in the work, you get it.
I was back there, and I got invited 371 miles from the city to go to almost St. Louis to a party. And if I didn't have conflicting issues, I would have went to that party. But they understood. I had to call, and when I got there, I called them and told them what was going on, and they told me next trip. So I have to plan a little ahead next time when I go and make sure I make that trip. Because they had people come from three other states to that wanted to talk to me that I ended up talking to on the phone. Like I said, you gotta start getting out there. Even if as Norris says, 25 below tonight, you gotta go dress warm. I think Bill calls it schmoozing.
Yep, cost of doing business.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
you know,
just when I thought I was out of this thing.
No. Just when you thought you would get out, you get dragged back in, just like in the movie. You gotta do a lot to get a little.
Speaking of movies, this movie that just came out, Why We Ride, have you seen it yet? You heard about it?
Oh, the one that the Fry Brothers are in?
I don't know who's in it.
Pete Alva, he's making another movie, and he was involved in that movie too. Some of his footage is in that movie. Bill and I are in that movie.
Which one is that?
We did the Why We Ride.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think we're in. Yeah, I think we made the cut on that, if I'm not mistaken. They interviewed.
Okay.
Me, Bill, and a couple other old guys for that movie.
Good.
And there's a movie poster floating around of me and a movie poster floating around of Bill for that movie.
Well, we get a chance to take a look at it on the 16th of January, just the day before the Chicago Motorcycle Show. We've got a private screening schedule.
Uh-huh.
Out in Whitfield Mall.
Oh, okay. That's still around, huh?
Yeah, it's been around. All the way out in Schaumburg.
Yeah. No, I haven't been there. Well, the last time I went to Schaumburg was when my grandma died, but that was like in the 90s, 95, I think.
Yeah, it's a huge place that Whitfield Mall is.
I heard it got bigger. I was there as a kid, but I heard it got bigger.
Yeah, I think it's the largest one in the area.
Yeah, when I went to Harlem and Irving, I couldn't believe the difference from when I left to where it is now.
Yeah. Things are changing, though. Things are changing. Some are getting bigger, and some are just disappearing. The old Evergreen Plaza closed.
Mm-hmm. How's that one on Harlem and Cermak?
Still there.
Still there? I forget the name of it. Riverside Mall?
That's it. That's exactly it.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't been there in a while. I drove by there, as a matter of fact. But
yeah, I'm looking forward to
get
my bike back. It's been 2 years. It's been 2 years, Phil.
Mm-hmm.
2 years without riding a motorcycle, man. Can you imagine that?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is don't get on there and think you can handle the world. Get used to it first.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I'm having some conversations with a well-known aftermarket performance parts provider.
Mm-hmm.
And this
you know, you might even want to go take that refresher course.
No doubt.
You might want to talk to them about coming into your fold.
Well, we've been having some talks with the Illinois Department of Transportation to facilitate more training in the inner city.
Why are you going to go to a government agency?
Well, who's going to pay for it? You're talking about starting a private training school?
No, there's private training schools all over. Some of the colleges have them. Some of the colleges have them. Some of the dealers have them on their own. There's some that are done by motor cops that are retired. The one here,
The
program we have in California, you go on Friday, you register, Saturday you show up, you ride their bike, Sunday You do all your evaluations on Saturday. Sunday you do your testing, and Monday you walk into the DMV. And if you can't pass it Sunday, they don't let you go until they're confident that you're confident you can know what the fuck you're doing.
Right. Same thing. Same thing here. It's about $360 with the private classes.
Yeah.
That's the one I got back in about 2005.
Mm-hmm.
The state has a program where they're paying $25. And they get that money back when they finish the course.
Right.
And because so many people are getting the motorcycles, you know, we're encouraging the state to make these classes more accessible in the inner city. Because
mm-hmm.
the colleges have them, but they're all on the outskirts of town.
Right. Well, then you need to get somebody in your school that is willing to move into the city.
Yeah, we're looking for a location right now. They're willing to fund it and to make it possible by dropping the trailers and the bikes. But you just need a location where there's 200 by 300 feet of land and either a field trailer or a classroom setting that's already there, space that they can use for the class itself.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a great marketing opportunity for us to engage people at those types of locations in the inner city.
Yeah.
Because when it comes down to the building our organization, the things that we're trying to do, we really need to get some people on board that are new to motorcycling, the unadulterated crowd. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you. That's why I'm telling you. You gotta. It all starts with going to the stuff and being seen, Terry. If people don't know who you are and what you're trying to do, you're not going to get any help. That's a fact.
I believe you. I know it's the truth. I know it's the truth. Yeah, I know it's the truth. I was lucky, man. I came into this thing with a club that had been around for 34 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I wore that three-piece setup, and, of course, Illinois was on the bottom of that rocker.
Right.
So getting around wasn't a big problem. And the respect was there.
Really, because if you're honest and tell them what happened and tell them why you're not on your bike, if you're in your car or your truck or whatever you drive, and you explain to them why this is what you're doing, I'm kind of, you know, be humble. Humble yourself and tell them the truth.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
I respect you more.
If you start
out on a good foot, you'll get good results. If you start out...
Yeah.
If you start on the wrong foot, nobody's going to touch you.
Such as lying.
You're going to be... And then what you don't want to happen is somebody telling you, well, we don't want you around. Because that'll spread like wire fire, and then you're fucked.
Well, I definitely got some work to do, that's for sure. We got a good program, and we want it to grow. We want people to know about it, to appreciate it, because it has some value. And it's something that we
what
can
I would do
forward.
If I was you, if you got 9,400 people, what I would do is go through that list of people, and if there's a picture available, and see what's going on, and see where they're at in their motorcycle community, and if it's someone high up or someone that's the most popular or whatever, that's the guy you want to talk to. It's like if you go to Confederation and Club meeting, all the heads of state are there. Those are the guys you got to talk to too.
Yeah, we're on the phone daily, man.
And if you've ever stepped on your crank and pissed somebody off, you need to build that bridge again.
Yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow right there.
You're known by what you've done, where you're at in life, and if there's a there's a little bullshit following you, it's going to follow you till you die.
Yeah, isn't that something? Well, Dr. Phil, it's been a real pleasure, man.
Brother, where do you get my bill? You're in trouble.
Yeah.
But
it's been a real keeping real conversation, though.
Yeah. No, hey, man, you're welcome anytime. Just,
yeah, I can see.
Just do me a favor and think about what I told you. Sit down with a pen and a piece of paper and write it out.
Well, you know what? There's actually a book in progress, and I'm damn near finished. So I think it's there. I think it's there. But the humbling part that has the most challenge.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, if you had something in your past, that's the first person you need to go talk to get that shit straightened out. Because you know and I know, once somebody says something, you're fucked.
Yeah, well, you know it. You know it, and you know what? I'm going to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's having its effect.
Because at a certain point, whatever happens, you're going to go somewhere and somebody's going to bring that up. So the best part I can tell you is to be humble, and if somebody chews your ass, let them chew your ass. It ain't worth getting rack packed.
Oh, very good. That
trust
being
me,
said, I'm going to do it. Say it again?
I've seen it happen already.
Yeah.
I seen a guy do something 10 years ago, and he showed up out of the blue one day, and he got fucked up.
Oh.
Somebody asked him a question and he lied, and somebody else that knew him very well walked over and said, "Why did you lie?" And that's what lit it off. And there was nothing. And he told him he was with me and Bill, and they jumped on me and Bill. That guy didn't ride in with us. He thought being with us would save the day for him, but did him no good because he lied.
Oh, check it out. Yeah, let me give some thought to that, man. Let me give some thought to that. I appreciate that.
Don't worry.
This is a learning piece. You know, it's really a season's last piece. One thing about the motorcycle community is it should get deeper and deeper. You can't
say that
ride
again.
In the motorcycle community. It gets deeper and deeper, the community, the intricacies of the community. For someone that just buys a motorcycle, I think my guy said it best. He said it takes about 3 to 5 years before you really find out what the MC thing is all about. And
yeah,
even after that, you're still learning.
Yeah, because it's just like I told you. If you walk in thinking you're king shit, somebody's going to call you on it. And you better be able to back yourself up, because if you can't, you're fucked.
Yeah, I was riding high, man. I was riding high real early in the game.
Mm-hmm. The most I can tell you is just be yourself.
Very good. Well, look, man, thanks again for everything. It's been a real pleasure talking with you. I'm going to get out of here.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. You guys have a good night.
All right. You too. I seen he sent me a message today. I didn't know he was going to call in, but I'm glad he did. I'm glad I could enlighten him. But I'll talk to you about that off the air.
Yep.
So other than that, I'm gonna play an Atticus 7 song, and I'm gonna call it a night. And I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Have a great night. see you then.
All right. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.